I'm talking about renunciation and its application today. But let me start with a poem that was written by Nicholas Roark in the book called Flame in Chalice. And it's titled Left. I am prepared for the road. All that was mine, I renounced. You will take it, my friends. Now, for the last time, I shall survey my house. Once more, I shall view my possessions. Upon the images of friends, I shall look once more for the last time. I know already that here nothing of mine remains. Possessions and all that impeded me freely, I am giving away. Without them, I shall be more free. Before the one who calls me liberated, I shall appear. Now once more, I shall survey the house. View once more that from which I am released. Free and liberated and firm in thought, the images of friends and the view of my former things do not confuse me. I am going. I am hurrying, but once more, for the last time, I shall survey all that I left. It's very profound. Renunciation is a reminder of the basic principles and disciplines of the teaching. So I was thinking about this law this morning and studying the lecture and thinking more and more about it and recognizing even though this law and to obey this law esoterically is extremely challenging, the gift is beyond imagination. If we can strive to apply at least a portion of this law, the gifts are going to be so unimaginably beautiful that it's worth the effort. And when I'm talking about unimaginably beautiful, I'm not talking about something that may be gifted to us right now, but as the years unfold in our life, and also when we transition to the higher worlds. So this is a really important talk this morning. So it is a law. Renunciation is a law. This divine law has been in effect since our divine spark first turned its face northward toward home. When the spark began striving upon the path of evolution to home, this law began to operate. The teaching says, let a person deliberately realize that he or she is a son of God returning to the Father, that he is God himself seeking to find the God consciousness that is within him, that they are the lower aspect of divinity seeking alignment with the higher. On the path of initiation, the path of discipleship, it is through renunciation that we eventually enter the initiation, the one called the Great Renunciation Initiation. As the person renounces the little self, they can then approach a realm of freedom in which they totally lose their little self-will. It is in these moments their permanent atoms are progressing. As long as a person has self-will, also known as the little e, ego, that person cannot be free. They cannot escape suffering and pain. When we observe the nature of self-will, we gradually realize that there are hundreds of fragmental willpowers within us and outside of us. They dominate and control us. And in fact, these hundreds of fragments can cause a person to regress instead of to progress. So for example, some people retrogress, some people progress, some have conflict. The human soul has such a group of lives. Now really think about this. Put yourself into this law and this experience and imagine the reality of this happening within yourself. That your soul has a group of lives, the lives of the mental body. This mental body in some parts are advancing, some are going backwards, some are fighting, some are stupid, some are sleeping, some are stupefied from drug abuse, and maybe only 10 or 15 atoms in your mind are functioning. This is the state of the human soul's mind. A person's mind is what they have in their mind. What is it that the person has in their mind? In the mind, there is some fighting, right? There is some fighting. Some cells are comfortable. Some are totally sleeping. A little group is advancing. One of the advanced atoms is becoming what we call a permanent atom. But one, two, or three graduations of atoms does not make our mental body whole. It does not make it complete if it is a broken mind. You can go to mental health institutions and you can see these things. You see that the human mind is totally disarranged and is in a miserable condition. It is because the mental atoms in the mental body as a whole are not developed. Can the mind be developed? Yes, it can, through three things: meditation, sacrifice, and renunciation. So if, particularly if you're a psychiatrist, if you're a psychologist, if you are a therapist of some kind, take these three things, teach them to your clients, and this is how you can save them. Have them practice meditation, engage in sacrifice and renunciation. Meditation is going to develop the atoms in the mind. So think about this. Meditation is going to develop the atoms in the mind. Think of people who say, I cannot meditate, or I don't need to meditate anymore, I'm there. If they are they whole? Are they whole? If they're too busy to meditate, they are not whole. Meditation will develop the atoms in your mind. Sacrifice is going to advance them. See, this is, takes a lot of thought to try to understand, but in meditation, you will begin to understand why and how sacrifice will advance these atoms. And then renunciation. What is renunciation going to do? It's going to graduate these atoms and increase the light in your mind and create this bridge that we all talk about, the higher part of the Annapurna Bridge. This is a most crucial point on the spiritual path, that our old self must die so that we have a new self. The Master speaks about three disciples who came to the door. They did not resign their riches. They did not resign their ego, their greed. And they became the wandering disciples of the world. They distributed chaos around the world because they were still materialistic. They did not renounce their little self. One of them made a breakthrough. Now, this is metaphorical. All right, think about that one that made the breakthrough, that became that permanent atom, the most advanced atom in the mind, past, and then became a permanent atom of humanity. When some atoms advance, the rest may crack or degenerate. That is why there is a law of advancement which emphasizes harmonious development, a development that asks for renunciation. To develop oneself harmoniously, there should be no cracks and no cleavages in them. Make haste slowly is a phrase. Some people forget steps. And if they forget the steps that are so necessary, meditation, sacrifice, renunciation, they become broken and not whole. One of the beautiful mysteries of renunciation is group consciousness. Group consciousness is conditioned by the initiatory process of renunciation. Once you have renounced your self-will, the will of the personality life, and become one with the will of God, it is then that you are going to enter into group awareness and function as one with the greater whole. Can you imagine a world where everyone is functioning as one with their greater whole? No, I can't either. But it's a great image. And sometimes I think when we really study and contemplate the paintings of Nicholas Roark, it almost puts us in that place of having a strong desire or lofty goal or vision of becoming one with the greater whole, because it is so incredibly beautiful. In the third initiation, group consciousness slowly rises like a sun above the horizon of our life. Now, renunciation does not taught much, particularly in the United States. It's not referenced. So therefore, it's not going to be very popular, nor is it going to be even understood. Most people, most especially people, whether it's an adult or a child, when they hear that phrase, "You must give this up," do you know what's going to happen? There's a tendency to want to possess it even more tightly. They don't want to give it up. To renounce means to no longer be identified with what is false. That's what we are renunciating. To renounce means to reject what controls us, what enslaves us. It first begins with physical objects, then emotional objects, and then mental. So basically, renunciation is a withdrawal from the objects that we are attached to. To renounce means to be your true, capital S self, your true self. When we are able to withdraw our consciousness from the objects we desire the most, objects that are literally enslaving our soul, we are already shifting our consciousness, withdrawing our consciousness from the objects we desire the most. We are now shifting our consciousness, shifting it from the object of attachment to the interests of the innermost self. Renunciation is an act of focusing our interests in our innermost self. We must renounce what we are attached to allow our atoms to enter into a new phase of life. Every sacred teaching gives instructions about the importance of renunciation. The teaching that we follow, the path we follow, is more specific to how to do this, and even more specific as to why. Master Moria, about renunciation, said, "I shall set forth the characteristics of those seeking the common good. The fifth one is renunciation." Those who are seeking the common good. The fifth of the seven is renunciation. Renunciation, he says, is a sense of ownership alongside a readiness to safeguard the talent of other people's creativity. So what is the common good? The most successful, happy, healthy people are those who renounce everything which cannot be offered to the common good, the general good of all. Serving the common good is at the core of all teaching. Serving the common good is an ordainment of the Lords of Shambhala. It is a practice of harmlessness. It's pretty easy to understand. It is a practice of harmlessness. Serving the common good is a practice of harmlessness. We need to learn how to renounce things, what to renounce, the purpose of renunciation. In fact, we are told that the whole journey of our human soul, our divine spark, through all the kingdoms is designed in such a way that it learns how to renounce. So from the beginning of time, our spark is taught how to renounce. Buddha taught that the selfish and conceited person could not build the future because by cosmic law he would be outside the current of life. Now, I'm not going to get into this, but I remember many, many years ago a teacher I was studying with, an early teacher of my beginning self, talked about being part of the horror of being part of outside the currents of life. He knew a lot about it. This was part of his teaching. And I will never forget it. I'll never forget it. And now I'm seeing this teaching of Buddha saying that we cannot build our future if we are selfish, if we are conceited, because by cosmic law, that person would be outside the current of life. What does it mean to be outside the current of life? The current of life is what takes us back home, back to the Father's home. Buddha taught his disciples if they were selfish, if they were possessive, if they could not cooperate with the laws of nature, they would never be a part of the great world community. In admitting disciples into his community, Buddha's community, Buddha required renunciation of personal possessions. This was austerely carried into the whole of life of the one that was striving for enlightenment. Once a pupil asked the Blessed One, "How should one understand the fulfillment of the covenant regarding the renunciation of property?" Buddha answered, "One disciple renounced all things, but his teacher continued to reproach him for possession. Another remained surrounded by objects, but he did not merit reproach." The Buddha said, "The feeling of possession is measured not by the objects, but thoughts. One may have objects and still not be possessive or a possessor." The Buddha was teaching that the student could have the things in which his life were most necessary to his needs and to fulfill his dharma, but most especially those things that would enable him to manifest his life purpose. But if the person, this is the key, if the person became attached to what he was using, whether it was needed or not, then he would be a possessor. It seems natural to most people to believe that whatever they have, they own. I mean, we see this. It belongs only to himself, only to themselves. In other words, they are the possessor of all that they have. This is my husband. He belongs only to me. These are my children. They belong only to my family and me. This is my money, and I'm the sole possessor of this money. It goes on and on. My house. Don't we hear people say that my house, my husband, my mom, my this, my dad, my this and that. It's my. Attachment, attachment, attachment. Do you know how many husbands you're going to have throughout your incarnations? How many children you're going to have? How many spouses? How many houses? How many cars? How many horses? Dogs and elephants. It's interesting. Until we become so very burdened and enslaved by all that we possess. It then turns into a fear. What we own, what we possess, turns into a fear that we're going to lose what we possess, and so on. So to repeat, to renounce means to reject what controls you, what enslaves you. Renunciation first begins with physical objects, then emotional, then mental. Helena Rourke wrote to one of her students about renunciation. She said, "Precisely, renunciation in one's consciousness was emphatically insisted upon by all the teachers of antiquity." She said, "Do you remember the example of the two disciples mentioned in the Book of Living Ethics? One had no possessions, yet the teacher reproached him all the time for his attachment to things. The other was surrounded by things, but he did not receive the reproval of the teacher. We must first learn how to renounce physical objects that imprison us and make us their slaves. But after we give our favorite object away, we must also see that it disappears from our memory as if it had never been in existence. There are several layers of understanding to this. Eventually, you will be called on to renounce your ego, your little self, and in its place to think and to feel and to speak and to act as if you were one with the true self in all forms. So renunciation is a law. It is a law which works mechanically. It's a law that works mechanically until we reach the stage of discipleship. And it is now we can apply the law of renunciation consciously. Everything that we have can either limit us through our identification and attachment with it, or release us with that attitude of renunciation. Now here's something to ponder. Initiations. Initiations are stages of renunciation. So if someone tells you, I'm this great initiate, I've taken the third or fourth or 10th or 20th initiation, well, just look around and about them. Do they have attachments? Initiations are stages of renunciation. The greater initiate you are, the greater is your renunciation. It is also very true that the more a person renounces, the purer this self becomes. Eventually, the law of renunciation, from the mechanical experiences of this law to the consciously applied experiences with the universal law, will enable us to awaken the true self. To realize that in accordance with the law of renunciation, all that we so urgently want and are attached to is a temporary appearance brought on about the attachment of our desire to this and previous lifetimes. When in other lives and in this life, we become identified with the objects of our desires. Listen, this is the teaching tells us, and we can see it if we have the transparency to see it. When in other lives and in this life, we become identified with the objects of our desires, we will develop a repulsion for the same object in our next lifetime. So the question is, what are you repulsed by now? This repulsion develops to an inner, even keener way when the law of renunciation takes the objects of our desires away from us. The law of renunciation. This is because normally when this law is operating in our lives, it is very painful. Then later, the pain in the memory and the unconscious memory of the suffering causes us to become very negatively polarized. So much so that in the future, any desire charged with the memory of the past and suffering becomes negatively polarized, and the future repels the objects of our desires. Repulsion will make a person chase after the objects of his or her desires, but they will never be satisfied with them. And if they acquire the object, they will never fully enjoy it. Those who serve humanity are those who instinctively or consciously work under the law of renunciation. It is renunciation that gives them the power of the soul and the power of the spirit. This is so beautiful and so instructive. So here's a question to answer. What is the purpose of renunciation? And the answer is, it will give you the power of your soul and the power of spirit. What are the gifts of soul power and spirit power? Immortality. We are told that it is only in passing through the tests of renunciation that the door of higher initiations will be opened for us. If our many lives are filled with acts of conscious renunciation, if our life is filled with many acts of conscious renunciation, we can pass the tests of the fourth initiation and successfully enter into our divine heritage. If we do not consciously exercise renunciation, then life puts us in such conditions in which we painfully learn how to renounce. We will also realize that the lesson of renunciation will repeat year after year, life after life, with greater taxation. With greater taxation until we learn our lessons. So take a minute, think about this law and how it is operated in your life. When this law came into operation and tried to take what you had away from you, did you let it go? Or did you cling more tightly? People think that to have more, one must attach to the objects that they accumulate and contain. The law says to have more, you must give more. To have more, you must give more. This seems illogical. It did to me for a long time. It took me a while to figure it out. That it is only by giving that we become a part of a greater vessel, only by giving. And then ascend to higher levels of beingness. It is only by giving that we become part of a greater consciousness, and the richness of the treasure flows in and out of us. There is a paradox that says we can say that the more empty we are, the more we have. The distribution upon a lower level is the accumulation of a higher level. By giving, we receive. By receiving, we give. By giving and receiving, we proceed on the path. Wisdom and light and beauty increase in giving. All higher values are the fruit of giving. One can have no value without the act of giving. And this is why God is called the all-giving. And initiates are called vessels that continually give and continually renounce. The more they give, the more they renounce, the more they receive. So renunciation is not an act of the refusal of receiving. This is important. Renunciation is not an act of the refusal to receive. It is an act of letting go of what you are holding on to. The growing child outgrows his shoes, his clothes. He leaves behind his toys, his teddy bears, his little storybooks. Look at all the things you left behind as you grew up. See how this law has already been operating in your life. The law of renunciation is a basic theme of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita instructs the soul that it is to perform action without attachment, and thereby lay the foundation for later relinquishing, which can be effected without pain and sense of loss, because we have acquired the power to renunciate. So let us strive to experience the law of renunciation during Aries, Taurus, and now we're approaching the festival of Gemini, the festival of humanity. Let's try to be conscious of this law.